masculine women, feminine men. Which is a rooster, which is a hen? It's hard to tell them apart today and say,
sister, I do it. Ain't nobody called me. You got to prove it on me.
We've run half of our lives from that damn word queer.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. There's election disappointment down under, but much U.S. success. A Brazilian state is close to approving a sweeping gay civil rights bill, and antique tunes chart our queer music heritage. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Brian Nunes.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending November 10th, 2001. Australian voters have returned the nation's ruling coalition to power with a 10-seat majority and given Prime Minister John Howard a historic third term. It's a disappointing result for gays and lesbians, whose legislative progress has been staunchly blocked by Howard and his Liberal Party. In this campaign, gay and lesbian issues won more supportive attention than previously from the largest opposition party, the Australian Labour Party, whose Kim Beazley conceded defeat and resigned as party leader, with the ALP vote down in most states from the last federal election. The anti-gay One Nation Party lost ground in this election. Gay and lesbian voters were actively wooed by the Australian Democrats, whose results showed little change from the last election, and by the Greens, who won more votes than ever before. Green Party Senator from Tasmania, Bob Brown, who was the first open gay ever elected to the Australian Senate, won re-election.
There were also elections this week in a number of U.S. states and cities, with initiatives relating to gays and lesbians on the ballots in five cities. Domestic partner benefits for city employees were banned in Houston, Texas by a narrow margin, but were approved by a landslide in Miami Beach, Florida.
Civil rights protections found solid support in three Michigan municipalities. Voters in Kalamazoo and Traverse City rejected proposed city charter amendments patterned after Cincinnati, Ohio's, that would have proactively prohibited the inclusion of gays, lesbians, and bisexuals among the protected categories in any local ordinances. In the Detroit suburb of Huntington Woods, almost 70% of voters upheld an ordinance against sexual orientation discrimination that was passed by the city commission earlier this year. The anti-gay Mississippi-based American Family Association was a driving force behind all three anti-gay Michigan initiatives, as well as another proposed charter amendment to be voted on in Ypsilanti next year.
It was generally a good day for U.S. gay and lesbian candidates. Carrboro, North Carolina Mayor Mike Nelson and Houston, Texas City Council member Anise Parker both won re-election, as did Arlington County, Virginia County Board member Jay Fizette and Tacoma Park, Maryland City Council member Bruce Williams. Atlanta, Georgia City Council member Kathy Woolard won a runoff berth in her bid for City Council president. Minneapolis, Minnesota had a remarkable 10 openly gay or lesbian candidates for various city offices. Three of five openly gay candidates won seats on the Minneapolis City Council: Scott Benson, Robert Lilligren, and Gary Schiff.
Some other U.S. election results were also welcomed by most gays and lesbians. In Virginia, gay-supportive Democrat Mark Warner won the governorship over Republican Mark Early, whose anti-gay campaign featured the slogan, "Virginia values, not Vermont values," representing his opposition to legal recognition of same-gender couples. In New Jersey, gay-supportive Democrat Jim McGreevy won the governorship over Republican Brett Schundler, an opponent of domestic partner benefits and equal adoption rights. New York City's next mayor, Republican Michael Bloomberg, is a solid supporter of gay and lesbian civil rights.
The U.S. Senate, by a 3-1 margin this week, approved ending the federal ban on domestic partner benefits in Washington, D.C. The Washington City Council enacted a broad domestic partners measure in 1992, but the Congress then made federal appropriations to the nation's capital contingent on suspension of the ordinance. Federal funds comprise the bulk of Washington's budget. That rider is absent from this year's appropriations bill, although the city would still be barred from using federal funds for the ordinance's implementation. The Republican-controlled U.S. House had also approved Washington appropriations without the domestic partners ban in September. The two versions move next to a House-Senate conference committee.
The Denver, Colorado City Council this week voted 11-1 to add gender identity as a category protected under the city's anti-discrimination ordinance. The civil rights of transgendered people will be protected in employment, housing, and health care. Neighboring Boulder had previously passed a similar ordinance that was the model for Denver's.
Also in Colorado, a state appeals court has ruled that sexual orientation cannot be used as a basis to deny visitation to parents. The ruling overturned a trial court decision that a gay father could not have overnight guests when his daughter was present. The lower court had also barred him from taking her to his gay-affirming church, lest she see what the judge called hugging, showing of affection one to the other, women with women, men with men. No similar prohibitions had been placed on the girl's mother, a conservative Christian.
A U.S. federal lawsuit seeking to hold police officers liable for the suicide of a teen they threatened to out failed this week in Pennsylvania. The late Marcus Wayman had been sitting in a parked car with another male teen in 1997 when three Minersville police arrested them for underage drinking. Because they were carrying condoms, officers asked if the teens were queer and had intended to have sex with each other. The officers say the teens said yes. The officers lectured the teens against homosexuality and threatened to tell their families that they were gay. Within a few hours of his release, Wayman shot himself dead. With the help of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, Wayman's mother, Madonna Sterling, filed the civil lawsuit claiming the officers had violated his privacy rights. This week, a federal jury cleared all three police officers of any liability in the case. However, the ACLU says that an appellate court ruling Sterling secured in the process of gaining this week's hearing established a landmark precedent recognizing the privacy rights of young gays and lesbians.
Courts in the Canadian provinces of Ontario and Quebec this week heard lawsuits seeking equal marriage rights for same-gender couples. At the same time as Quebec's Solicitor General opposed the lawsuit there, the Provincial Justice Department announced that it's preparing a bill to establish registered partnerships for gay and lesbian couples that would confer a number of legal rights. The provincial government intends to introduce the bill before the end of this year and hold hearings on it in 2002. The Montreal plaintiffs denied the partnerships would be equivalent to marriage, and some have suggested the announcement of the bill was offered as a distraction from the lawsuit.
The Parliament of the Brazilian state of Minas Gerais has given initial approval to a civil rights bill protecting gays and lesbians. Member of Parliament João Batista de Oliveira's Law 694-99 would add sexual orientation as a category protected from discrimination. Violators could be punished with fines, business closures, or, in the case of civil servants, dismissal and disqualification. The bill specifically upholds the right of same-gender couples to display affection in public and defines a procedure for punishing police officers who harass them. It would also create a referral center to advise those who believe they've experienced discrimination and would add a gay and lesbian community representative to the State Human Rights Council. To become law, the bill must still pass a second vote in the state parliament and be signed by the governor. Igelhurk, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, has called for letters in support of the bill.
And finally, after two delays and many modifications as a result of the September 11th attacks on the U.S., the 53rd annual Emmy Awards were finally staged and telecast globally. Winners of interest included non-gay Canadian Eric McCormick, named Best Lead Actor in a Comedy for his gay title role in NBC's Will and Grace.
Open gay Todd Holland, named Best Director in a Comedy a second time for Fox's Malcolm in the Middle, who again acknowledged his partner Scotch in his acceptance speech and gave him a kiss.
Openly gay Briton Derek Jacobi, named Best Guest Actor in a Comedy for his appearance on NBC's Frasier.
Best TV Movie and two other honors for HBO's Wit, adapted from the Pulitzer Prize-winning play by open lesbian Margaret Edson.
Five honors for the ABC miniseries Life with Judy Garland, Me and My Shadows, produced by open gays Craig Zidane and Neil Marin.
And best music performance for icon Barbra Streisand and three other honors for her Fox special Timeless. Streisand also closed the show with a tearful rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone.
But the biggest winner of the evening was certainly the show's host, open lesbian Ellen DeGeneres, although neither of her two nominations resulted in a statue. Her work under the very difficult circumstances was honored with an extended standing ovation at the end of the show. Afterwards, she was widely praised, with The Hollywood Reporter saying that only two words stood between the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences and utter disaster, Ellen DeGeneres. Most often quoted was DeGeneres' line, "What would bug the Taliban more than seeing a gay woman in a suit surrounded by Jews?" Perhaps the most enthusiastic kudos for DeGeneres came from past Emmy winner Cameron Manheim of ABC's The Practice, who told People magazine, "I think Ellen DeGeneres is the very best of our generation. How she handled this evening with such grace and dignity and humor and spirit and sensitivity and humanity makes me want to become a lesbian. I'm madly, madly in love with her."
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 10th, 2001, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
The explosion of music by and about gays and lesbians in the past several years has roots that go back as far as the 1920s. During this and the next two editions of This Way Out, Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle, whom you usually hear hosting Audiophile, will be exploring our musical heritage in a special series called Queer Vinyl. Here's part one.
This special show will explore 10 of the musical recordings that shaped our queer music history. My special guest is J.D. Doyle. While many of you have heard J.D. as my co-anchor on Audiophile, what you may not know is that J.D. has been called one of the foremost historians of music of interest to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered communities. And he has one of the largest private collections of this music in the world.
There's probably few people that are as fanatic about queer music as I am. I just don't think gay and lesbian music of the past should be forgotten. So when Chris proposed this show to me, it was kind of a daunting task, trying to come up with 10 songs to represent almost a century of our music.
I asked you to pick the most 10 most important. Those were the words I used, and you just didn't want to do that. You told me that that wasn't possible. Why is that?
I very much hedged on that, the burden of someone picking the most important. How do you measure that? Would it be sales? Would it be airplay? I don't know. You know, I just don't know how you would measure something like that. I chose to come up with a list of things that I thought were influential, songs that influenced other artists. I wanted to represent as many decades as I could. There's some limitations there. Also, one of my own personal criteria is I wanted music that was lyrically gay. This eliminated a lot of music right off the bat. For example, artists like Johnny Ray, Johnny Mathis, Liberace, certainly well-known gay figures, sang nothing that was gay, so they were off the list right off.
So what are we going to hear first?
I wanted to start with just about the earliest recording I could find that actually dealt with the subject of being gay. And this is from 1926. The song is called Masculine Women and Feminine Men. And it was recorded by several acts that same year. This, I think, probably is the earliest one because I know it was recorded in February of 1926. It's a band orchestra from England, and their name is Merritt Brunies and his Friars End Orchestra. Thank you.
women, feminine men. Which is a rooster, which is a hen? It's hard to tell them apart today and say, sister is busy learning to shave, brother just out a permanent wave. It's hard to tell them apart today. Hey, hey, girls were girls and boys were boys when I was a child. Now we don't know who's who, even what was. Knickers and trousers, baggy and white. Nobody knows who's walking inside those masculine women and feminine men.
Pretty amazing for 1926. Was there anything else from that era that you found to be important?
One other that I particularly wanted to play. Blues was kind of an important genre for gay-related music, and the artist I picked was Ma Rainey. She has been called by many people the mother of the blues, and she was a contemporary of Bessie Smith and also another blues artist, Gladys Bentley, who recorded around that same time. Bessie Smith had kind of a questionable sexuality. It was debated, but Ma Rainey was not so questionable. She recorded a wonderful song, which has been done by many lesbian acts since. The song is called The Prove It On Me Blues, and it was from 1928.
Makes the wind blow all the while. I hope to stay.
the gal to back in, old man. Cause I say I do it. Ain't nobody called me. Y'all got to prove it on me.
That was Ma Rainey with Prove It On Me Blues, and I just love the line in that song, I went out last night with a crowd of my friends. They must have been women, because I don't like no men.
That's the one Teresa Trell recorded as well.
Right, that was on the Lesbian Concentrate album, another landmark record itself.
So after the 20s, what happened then as we move forward in time?
I had a lot of trouble trying to find a song I thought worthy enough to include in the decades of like the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I started studying the music that I had available. There were basically three categories that I identified. An early category was in the late 20s and early 30s, and I'll call it cross vocals. Cross vocal is when, for example, a male artist sings a song intended for a female artist, but he doesn't change the pronouns. I have males recording songs like The Man I Love and Can't Help Loving That Man. Even Bing Crosby did a wonderful song, Ain't No Sweet Man Worth the Salt of My Tears. But these songs, to me, were only gay accidentally. They recorded them that way because the publishers in that time had a stranglehold on their work. You couldn't change one word of the song, and the public knew that, so they didn't really think much about it. They didn't give it a connotation of those songs being gay. So while they're fun for us to listen to, I don't think they quite belong in the list that we're doing. That left me with two areas. Blues was an area I've already kind of touched on. There were a number of blues songs up through the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s. Again, these were songs mostly by straight artists singing about gay people rather than gay artists. And some of them were derogatory. I can think of one title called The Sissy Man Blues. The third category I came up with was novelty songs, which has pretty much always been there. And this again is straight artists making fun of gay people and pretty much making fun of gay males. Lesbians were pretty much invisible for the novelty song genre. There was one artist I can think of, a lounge singer named Ruth Wallace in the 50s, very prolific, good singer, good writer. She had several songs of this nature. One was called He'd Rather Be a Girl. Another one was The Gay Young Lad from Trinidad. In that song, she finds out that her boyfriend really wanted another man, and she ended up being the lookout for them while they did their thing. Again, these were straight artists. They were singing about us. It wasn't us singing our songs. That really didn't happen until almost the 70s. The next song I want to play is by Maxine Feldman, and her song is called Angry Athis. It's pretty much considered the earliest openly lesbian song. Feldman wrote that song in 1969. It took another 3 years before it got recorded on a 45, and it finally appeared on an album in 1979. That album was called Closet Sale. And I also got to hear Maxine sing this song at the 1979 Gay and Lesbian March on Washington. Here's Maxine Feldman with Angry Athis.
I hate not being able to hold my lover's hand, except under some dimly lit table, afraid of being who I am. I hate to tell lies, live in the shadow of fear. We've run half of our lives from that damn word. We're not your wife.
not revealing wrinkles or rages. God forbid we reveal who we are. I hate not being unable to hold my lover's hand, except under some dimly lit table, afraid of being who I am. No longer afraid of being a lesbian.
In part two of this special three-part series, Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle will feature...
Mama, dear mama, I've something important to say.
That's part two of Queer Vinyl, next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Chris Ambidge, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle contributed program material. Thanks also to Christopher David Trentum. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on multimedia, then on radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world, which are currently being matched dollar for dollar by a grant from the Gill Foundation. For an important message about This Way Out's tenuous financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUOI Moscow, Idaho, Plains FM Christchurch, New Zealand, WSMU North Dartmouth, Massachusetts, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.